You are listening to Faith is Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the Spike Rogue. Each week, we design new decks for tournament play. We put our creations to the test and share our findings on the air. This week, we welcome special guest Everett Mohan, aka Aspiring Spike. First, we discuss our reactions to the BNR. Then, in the flashback, we discuss Joel Rael, Monvuli Recluse. Finally, on the brew session, we revisit decks that may have legs in the new Pioneer. All of that and more is coming up on this edition of Faithless Brewing. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 66 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. I am David Robertson, joined as always by my guy on the left coast who survived his sojourn to Mount Rainier. Damon, what's going on?
Hey, yeah, 93 miles later and I'm a different person with a lot more tan and a lot more bug bites, I'll tell you that much. And a ton of photos of Mount Rainier from every conceivable angle. One thing you don't appreciate as you go around the mountain on the first few days is how the faces of the mountain really change as you get different angles on it. And so you start to like get familiar with a certain face of it and realize that in a day or two it's going to be gone. You never see it again for the rest of the trip. And then you see a new one kind of approaching and you get to know it more as you see it from different angles. But man, what a stunning, stunning trip. If anybody ever has a chance to do any hiking around Mount Rainier National Park, highly recommend it.
Very cool. So we have some bad news. This will be, out of the 66 podcast, the first time the CEO, the founder, the Lodestar, Dan Schriever, will not be joining us. But as a penance, we have a treat for listeners, so we're going to take care of some housekeeping off the top, and then we will reveal our surprise. So we want to give a shout-out to our Patreon, as we do every week, patreon.com/faithlessbrewing. And we have one new Patreon, Henry H. Shout-outs to Henry H. for joining the Patreon. Just a reminder that the Patreon gives you access to our Discord. Obviously, a lot of news this week, all kinds of ideas flying around the Discord about new decks, new cards, complaints. Why didn't this happen earlier? So lots of activity there if people are interested.
Yeah, and the community league has been running seamlessly and flawlessly. We had a no ban list modern week with restricted cards. So all the cards that were banned are now restricted. And just one tip from me is that you should just play Gitaxian Probe and Mental Misstep and don't even think twice about it. Just play those cards. They're busted. Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, if you're playing blue, are kind of obvious next ones. But Get Probe and Mental Misstep going every single deck. That's kind of why they're banned.
So without further ado, we've got three reviews here. And even without Dan, we're still going to make Damon do some dramatic readings of these Apple reviews. One of them is quite long, so take it away.
So first up, from Your App Needs Work, we have Required Listening for All Aspiring Brewers, 5 stars. I played a couple of the guys from the Dive Down in my LGS in the before times. Found out they had a modern pod and got hooked. Found out about Faithless Brewing on their Niv-Mizzet crossover episode, and now it's my favorite. The hosts are some brilliant, spiky mages that bring up lines I would have never considered and report their findings on exciting brews. I hope they keep up the great work and keep saving me hundreds of ticks. Thanks for the review. We spend the ticks so you don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Next up, from Steven 070409, writes, Niv Forever, 5 stars. Love the cast since day one. Amazing group that's always looking at the best of brewing potential. They are the reason I foiled out Niv and Modern and Pioneer. If you're trying to brew or like going off the beaten path, this is the group to listen to. Foil Niv.
Tough in the post ban world of Modern, but still very cool.
I love the deck so much, I have a copy of it still sleeved up that's not going anywhere anytime soon.
There you go.
I'm going to put the Okos back in at some point to sit alongside the Astrolabes. Lastly, we have Maynard, writing, Great MTG Talk, 5 stars. This is the modern talk I've been looking for. Every week, a new singleton tested in Blue Moon. So I guess this person understands my tendencies to squeeze in a single Teferi, yeah. Master of Time, and call it a brew.
It's like that meme where they put, I switched one card in this list, is this a brew?
But I hope that's tongue-in-cheek, and David actually comes up with real brews, ignoring my Blue Moon minor tweaks.
So that's out of the way, and obviously the big news this week is the Pioneer Ban, and we are very fortunate to have Aspiring Spike himself, the man, the myth, the legend, joining us. Mr. Spike, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We're big fans.
Cool. I'm happy to be here, ready to really talk about this crazy ban announcement. I'm really glad I got this outlet to talk about my thoughts and feelings. That's really good timing.
Yeah, so just a reminder, everyone, Aspiring Spike streams at twitch.tv/AspiringSpike every day, and every weekday, I should say, and often on the weekends. I've seen you stream challenges and whatnot. Dan has asked us to keep this podcast under 2 hours, so we don't have time to go through all the sweet decks you are the creator of, but lately, if you've been losing to Shark NATO in Modern, you're the person to blame or credit. Mono Green Planeswalkers, you did a bunch of early work on Arclight Phoenix as well, and again, I'm not even mentioning all the decks, but so if people are not following Spike's stream, Dave and I both highly recommend it. Just full of ideas and a lot of positivity. And I really appreciate your patience. I see oftentimes you answer questions from listeners over and over again over the course of a 4 and 5 hour stream. Obviously, they come on later. They don't realize you've already answered it. And you're much better at not losing your patience than I would be.
Yeah, I think that patience is really important. I, at one point, was studying to be a teacher, and I think a lot of skills I acquired in that process have translated over to streaming, just it's an educational process. Don't mind answering the same question a million times.
See, I always find the beauty of playing on online at the comfort of your own home is you can salt off in your own home, and nobody can really get mad at you for that. And so you may as well enjoy and live ham it up. They drew the what? But... I suppose in your streaming, you don't quite have that solitude to salt into.
Not exactly.
So as we've alluded to, the big news was with no warning at all. No warning at all. There wasn't even the normal speculation where people, you know, start buying Splinter Twin or whatever for no reason. Out of the blue on Monday at about 9 a.m. Central Time, they announced a series of bans. There were bans of Historic and Brawl and Standard, which are not really the purview of this podcast. But most importantly, they decided after... not banning anything and unbanning Oath of Nissa, without any warning at all, they announced that Inverter of Truth, Kethis the Hidden Hand, Walking Ballista, and Underworld Breach were all banned. So this is functionally most of Tier 1 or all of Tier 1, depending on how you want to classify Pioneer. Your thoughts, Everett?
Well, as far as Pioneer are concerned, I haven't been very in tune with the format for the last few months. I've been mostly focused on Modern. And I've been mostly focused on Modern because I really felt that specifically the Underworld Breach, Lotus Field, and Inverter combo decks were, you know, hard to interact with. They're very format warping. The decks that you could choose to play that weren't those decks had to have good Inverter and Breach matchups. Otherwise, they're mostly unplayable. They were really difficult to interact with. If you weren't just trying to kill them by turn 4, you had to play really weird cards like Gideon's Intervention, Gideon of the Trials, you know, Damping Sphere, cards that were just so different from the way Pioneer was at the beginning of the format. Just basically as soon as Theros came out, Pioneer, which really felt like this brewer's paradise where the format was evolving and changing constantly, shifted when Heliod got printed with Walking Ballista, Underworld Breach got printed for Lotus Field combo, Thassa's Oracle got printed for Inverter. I feel like those three decks have just been super, super dominant in Pioneer for a long time. And I'm thrilled with this announcement. Thrilled, thrilled, thrilled. I initially was under the impression that Kethis being banned was weird and probably unnecessary. But after digesting and listening to people and seeing the Kethis deck in action a little bit, I think it's probably a good call. I actually think the Kethis decks were really, really good and probably underrated. I think I underrated their ability to grind. They just play a ton of good cards and they also have a really powerful combo. And I think that that was a good call. And I actually feel like that is a decision that makes me feel like Wizards is relatively in touch. It is weird to see this announcement right after the one 2 weeks ago where they claimed they were fine with the state of Pioneer. It really does feel like a complete 180. And I'm happy they did it. It does feel inconsistent, but... I do feel like they have listened to feedback and made the right call as far as Pioneer goes.
Now, do you think they were really listening to feedback, or it was maybe just the sort of financial reality of not you, but many other content creators were taking a break from creating Magic content until rotation. So you saw many high profile streamers who shall remain nameless switching to Runeterra, for instance. You had multiple premier events not firing. And then even people who were streaming Magic, obviously you've expressed a love for Modern. We sort of lost one of the great brewing minds from Pioneer. You weren't working in the format at all. We were, but we were really limiting ourselves to cards that were black and blue that let us play the kind of interaction you needed to have this kind of deck. So, I mean, there just weren't a lot of people in the queues. I think they were down to, what do you think, David, 160, 170, 150?
Yeah, I mean, I typically saw them in the kind of high 100s.
Yeah, and so I played a league last night, and I saw 357 people in the queue, so... If the goal is just to get more interaction, it is in terms of people playing the format, it's a success. I mean, it's already doubled the number of people in the queues.
Yeah, and I was playing today, and the format actually seems wide open. People are playing the decks they like, and things are certainly going to shake up at some point. But right now, it seems like nobody really knows what's good. A lot of people have strong opinions, but I just have heard just such varied opinions on what the best deck is, and I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, this is borderline the same size as like a standard rotation where half the format rotates out, it feels like.
I think that's a really good comparison. I always love format shakeups. That's where I tend to thrive, and those are my favorite times in Magic when everything is new and changing. I know that a lot of people feel completely the opposite, and they like, you know, to be able to buy into a deck and play it for a long time, and we should probably shout out all the people who 2 weeks ago bought into Inverter or Heliod Combo or Lotus Breach after Wizard said that their decks, they were happy with the deck's Speedo percentage in the metagame, and then 2 weeks later banned it. Huge shout out to them.
It was a bit of a running joke on our pod where I kept repeating their verbiage that they liked the place in the metagame. All these decks had pluses and weaknesses against each other.
Yeah.
And based on that logic, where they were, you know, very rigidly referring to win percentages as a criteria, you know, it seemed like maybe Inverter was never going to get banned unless somehow like Thought Scour got printed in the format or something. And now, like you're saying, all of a sudden their criteria is just, oh, people not liking this format is something we should be considering. Why we haven't done it until now is unknown. But
I really feel like this feels like a distinct shift in their ban philosophy that they've kept kind of consistent for like maybe a year and a half or so. It really felt like in 2019 with specifically Modern Horizons and the dominance of Hogak that the Magic community as a whole seemed very divided on what they were or were not interested Magic formats to look like. And there seemed to be a lot of division in what was and wasn't fun. And it seemed like that division and that, you know, the community not being able to decide what they want forced Wizards basically into only banning things based on win percentage and dominance. And I think that is good when the community is just so divided on, you know, on a format. But I do think that Pioneer specifically, we saw the complete opposite, or where almost, you know, probably 80 to 90% of Magic players really, really disliked what Pioneer had become. And I feel like I haven't seen that kind of agreement in the community on what a format should be or look like in a long time. And I'm glad that I feel like Wizards has shifted that philosophy a little bit.
Yeah, I think Standard 2 was getting pretty homogenous and disliked. I remember the Huey Jensen article about like which top flavor of Wilderness Reclamation you should choose. And so these growth spiral decks just were dominant for so long. And so, yeah, we used to see every single BNR, the line like this deck has a greater than 55% win rate across MTGO and top matchups against 9 out of 10 of the top meta decks or whatever. And we don't see any of that here. We see a brief rumbling that Kethis decks are currently among the top 5-0 trophy winners, that Wilderness Wreck is highly played, that Cat has high win rate and standard, but we don't see the 55% number. We don't see the archetype breakdown. We just see some sort of much more generic looking numbers about decks positions.
I was kind of the opinion that the 55% number, whatever win percentages they had for Pioneer, just didn't matter because no one was playing the format. You know, it's like they just, the challenges aren't firing and there's not very many people in the leagues. A lot of people in the leagues are just, you know, playing decks for fun or just playing, you know, these combo decks over and over again. But I feel like there weren't enough players to have data that really mattered, but That was just my personal opinion.
So let's talk about the specific ban. So four cards banned. You already kind of mentioned Kethys, and I kind of agree with you that the card had kind of seen a rise to prominence again from Oath of Nissa. It had not been a major player. From interacting with it briefly, I can say that the addition of Uro really changes it, just like you're saying. Okay, you stop their combo. You maybe get to, you know, board in your spheres for something other than the Lotus Breach. And so you've got them shut down that way. And then they resolve Uro because they're milling themselves so much, or they're copying Uro and attacking with it, even though they never even had to bring Uro back into play. And all of a sudden you're losing this fair game. And it's really surprising how sort of resilient that deck is. It seemed like, oh, it actually, you can get hated out through graveyard hate and everything else. I agree with you. It turns out I felt like it was a very powerful deck, and it was the kind of deck where a Matt Nass was going to find the right 75, and if people weren't ready for it, they were going to get destroyed for it. So it felt like a good kind of cover your ass. If the plan was to abandon all combo being tier one, this deck being super dominant after a series of bans would have been, I think, frustrating for the intent of what these bans are trying to accomplish.
The deck is somehow both miserable to play against because they have these non-deterministic lines. It's also miserable to play for probably 99% of the player base, including me, where you have the win established. You're like pretty sure that you, like, what could they possibly have? But to actually execute the win requires 5,000 clicks. And they're not even kind of like a simple pattern, like a walking ballistic combo where you just do, you know, click, click, click in a certain like pattern that you could execute with the macro. These are things where you have to keep reevaluating what cards you're exiling, what cards you're casting, what order you're doing everything in, what your end game that you're working towards. And it's just like, it kind of is like too many decisions to really actually enjoy the victory. It's just sort of stressful trying to beat the 25-minute timer and your opponent.
Yeah, one of the nice things you can say about Lotus Breach is it was deterministic. So once they got their Tome Scour going, you're like, all right, I can scoop. I'm not losing any equity here. With Kethys, yeah, it's not obvious if they have the win sometimes. Sometimes it seems like they must, but there's a series of mills and draws where they actually don't quite have it that turn. You're sort of obliged to F6 and twiddle your thumbs for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So that's Kethys. What's next? What do we think about the inverter ban?
I personally am of the opinion that Dig Through Time probably should have been the card to go instead. I certainly do view Dig Through Time as being a combo piece in the inverter deck. I do think that if Dig Through Time was in Modern, the inverter deck would be super duper dominant, because part of the combo, if you're not trying to kill on turn five, is exiling your own graveyard, and Dig Through Time is the perfect card to do that, because it also finds you, you know, either both pieces or the piece you're missing of Inverter, Oracle, or Jace. And so I think that Dig Through Time is the most powerful card in the Inverter deck. It's a card that we've seen be incredibly dominant in the blue-green Nexus deck at the beginning of the Pioneer format. I was of the opinion that Dig Through Time should have been the card banned out of that deck, not Nexus of Fate. Dig Through Time was the best card in the old Lotus Field combo deck. And I think that the old Lotus Field combo deck is going to be a huge player going forward in Pioneer. And Dig Through Time is the best card in Inverter. And I think that you can ban Dig Through Time now, and maybe Inverter plays Treasure Cruise and it's probably much worse, but still a playable deck. Or you ban Dig Through Time later. I don't think it's a hot take that Dig Through Time is a very, very good card and has been one of the best cards in Pioneer basically this whole time, and will continue to be one of the best cards as long as it remains legal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I actually really liked Inverter, like, conceptually. It's a really unique deck. It only exists with this very unique card pool that exists in Pioneer. Like Spike is saying, in Modern, you can't really do it because you don't have the Delve cards, even though you have all these other more powerful options. So I think it was just that it was too powerful. So if you left the deck around and made them play Treasure Cruise instead of Dig, so they like sort of a worse, quote-unquote, fair control deck when you are able to attack the combo, that would have been more interesting to me than the straight Inverter ban. And like you said, I mean, we've really had Dig Through Time get multiple combos banned out of Pioneer. In the early days when they were banning a lot, they took all their cards that weren't Dig. This is another case where they took a card that wasn't Dig. And we may yet see, as you're possibly implying, Dig getting a different combo banned, or eventually maybe, you know, Dig has to die for its own sins and it can't keep pushing women and children in front of the bus to protect it.
Yeah, I think one big question that we all have for Pioneer going forward is, what is the next best Dig Through Time deck after Inverter?
Yeah, I think that it's probably going to be a Wilderness Reclamation deck, but also Blue-White Control is a very good Dig Through Time deck. I guess it's going to be one of those two.
What about just that blue black shell where you still get to play Fatal Push and Thoughtseize and Dig Through Time? I mean, is that you think that architecture just without the combo finish, maybe with the blue Gear Hulk or some other sort of?
I don't usually like Thoughtseize in hard control decks, and I think that's probably going to continue to be true in Pioneer. But if you're forcing through cards like Jace Friend's Prodigy, some mid-rangey threats, I could definitely see it happening. And I actually did see a pretty interesting blue-black control list in Pioneer today. Somebody sent it in on the stream, and I bet there's something there. I bet you can. There are more homes than just Wilderness Reclamation and blue-white control for Dig.
All right, so card number three is, I think, the obvious one. Underworld Breach, I mean, when it was spoiled, people said that, you know, it's one of those cards where you kind of search to find the best way to use it. Once it kind of, the riddle gets solved, it gets pretty old. You know, it is similar to other cards in Magic's history that are exclusively used. The turn it resolves, the game often ends. There's not a lot of value Underworld Breach turns. And so I think it was just a matter of time before this card got banned. And like you referenced, it doesn't interact with other cards. Counter spells and stuff aren't that good against it. Hand removal, the cards where you go through and remove copies because they were playing Fey of Wishes, you couldn't still get all the Underworld Breach cards. So I think this card was an inevitable ban. Maybe not now, but I mean, at some point, this is a card that had to go.
Yeah, I there are plenty of times I would Tormod's Crypt in response to Underworld Breach and lose that same turn to the Underworld Breach. The card was just so, because it was two mana, it was so, so good at pressuring your opponent's counter spells. When, you know, your Lotus Field player is six mana and all the counter spells in Pioneer are three mana, or sometimes two post-board, and you can just make them counter your spell for two mana, and then you get to cast your next must-be-countered spell, like Pour Over the Pages, and then you can find another Breach. It was a nightmare for counterspell decks to fight the Underworld Breach decks, and I always felt like that was a huge problem to have a combo deck like this be soft to a deck full of counters, or a deck full of counterspells to be soft to a combo deck like this. And I'm very glad it's gone. I think it was legal for way too long, but it's gone finally.
Yeah, I mean, who knew a card that is in some ways better than Yawgmoth's Will would wind up being broken?
Yeah, banned in Legacy, and...
And it really was a sideboard tax. I mean, there was one specific two-mana artifact that the argument was, well, anyone can play it. It was like, well, we all had to. So we all played with like 12 or 13 card sideboards forever. You'd play entire leagues where you never took it out of your sideboard. You just felt like an asshole. It's like, well, I didn't have Abrupt Decays for the aggro deck because I had to stick two of the three of these things in and I just never played the stupid deck. But if you don't have them, you got no chance. So what can you do?
I'm glad you bring that up because you needed Dampening Spheres for the Underworld Breach deck. You need some kind of hate for the Walking Ballista Heliod combo. And then you need a different hate for the Inverter deck. It's like there is so many different dominant combo decks in Pioneer and none of the combo hate overlapped for the most part. I mean, Graveyard Hate, kind of, Pithy Needles, kind of, but... There weren't like Damping Sphere was just a necessary card and wasn't good in any other matchup.
Yeah, so that was the one thing that Kethis did, at least. You could justify bringing in Damping Sphere for another miserable matchup that you can't interact with your normal cards. So the fourth card banned is the most controversial to me, at least. Walking Ballista was obviously a combo with Heliod. It has made this mono white devotion list. I think probably the third of the three, but I would be open to anyone, as long as you weren't saying it was the best deck in the format, you could place it wherever you like. The one thing I did like about it is your normal creature interaction did get to interact with this combo. So, I mean, it still felt like you were playing Magic. Obviously, losing in a combo fashion, a quote-unquote Splinter Twin, right, where you're combining two cards to win, never feels great. When they draw exactly one Heliod and, like, three Walking Ballistas in their top 15 cards, as happened to me a lot this weekend, you do get a little tilted, but I always felt like this was the fairest of the combos. The normal cards you put in your deck, if you're playing Shock or, you know, Bone Crusher Giant, you did get to interact with this combo. So I didn't know necessarily think this card had to go, but I, you know, to your point, maybe their mentality was just, we're trying to remove combo as a tier one archetype. This is a combo deck, although it plays out much more like a mid-range deck. And so this has to go.
I think I agree with that. I do like the idea of just kind of starting fresh in Pioneer and not having mono white be the kind of obvious best dominant deck. I'm probably a little biased because I have historically played decks that are good against the Heliod combo deck in Pioneer. I've played a lot of the blue-white control deck, which I think has an excellent matchup against the mono-white deck. I played a lot of mono-green Karn devotion, and just you have four Karn, the Great Creators, stops their Walking Ballista combo. So I think that I've just kind of incidentally usually had a good matchup against mono-white. So I'd be interested in hearing people who have played a more, you know, who you play a more broad variety of decks and how dominant or oppressive they think the mono white deck is. But I was of the opinion that it wasn't too good, but I think it makes sense to ban it in this context.
Yeah, the mono white deck was a bit of a conundrum. I agreed that it always felt underpowered to me, but then somehow it would put up results. You would see top players choosing it for tournaments, and they would do well with it consistently.
Yama Killer being a great example of that.
Yeah, certainly a player I respect a lot, and he loves the deck to death. And I really think that my bias towards not thinking the deck is super good is just the decks I choose to play, and that I just usually have a good matchup against it, but it probably is very good against mono black and mono red while having a good inverter and Underwood Breach matchup. And I think that probably makes it I like the decision to ban the Ballista. It's probably not what I would have chosen to do, but I think that it was a good decision.
I think if the format was managed a little better, this is a ban that would not have happened. If they had sort of banned Inverter and Lotus Reach, maybe when all three of us would have preferred that they do, then we could have maybe run a more natural experiment where Mono White was quote unquote the deck to gun for. And without having to play, like we said, this five or six sideboard slot kind of tax, I think you could slot in a bunch of stuff that actually makes all these mid-range decks. You could even play, you know, Abrupt Decay was almost like soft banned in the format because it didn't kill anything out of those two decks.
And it used to be one of the best cards in the format.
It'd be very good against Mono White, and you could afford to have multiple in your main deck and multiple in your sideboard. So again, I there's so many confounding variables now, it's hard to say. I wish they had banned these other two decks I think are a little more obvious targets, and obviously maybe Kathis had to go once they unbanned Oath of Nissa, but in the spirit of what they're doing, yeah, maybe it was the card to ban, but I feel like it is a legitimate loss for the format. I mean, a deck that's playing that four mana owl just can't be that broken in my mind. So I'd be willing to let the mono white players still have their fun, but I understand their mentality at least in getting rid of the deck.
I do feel like Ballista is just like a kind of poorly designed Magic card. The fact that mono green with a lot of mana now gets point removal on creatures. It's just kind of strange to me, the fact that, like, removal is really poor against it because they just remove all the counters in response. Just has a very strange, like, feel to it. It doesn't feel like other Magic cards compared to, for example, like, Hangerback Walker, Stonecoil Serpent in a similar overall category. Walking Ballista doesn't quite feel right to me. But that's pretty subjective. On the other hand, we're now, you know, launching Nukes from Orbit to clean house and Pioneer. And so some stuff gets
just
hit.
Just like Ripley said, man, nuke it from space. Just the only way to be sure. Well, for people who are old like me who played a lot of Triskelion back in the day, it didn't feel that different than, but obviously much more powerful than Triskelion. So.
Yeah, Triskelion.
Dating myself a bit. So, okay, we have got a whole new metagame, and the one thing I want to remind players is there was a metagame before Theros, so you can't just pick. I've seen you very patiently on your stream explain to people, you don't just get to pick your pet deck up and it's going to be good again. So you can't just start playing, you know, Teemer Energy or whatever you know, that we'd already kind of determined wasn't good enough and just like jam it back into the queues. And I was playing a few people trying out some of those kind of, hey, if you're playing a deck because it's fun and you love playing it, that's one thing. But just go in with your eyes open. There was a metagame before Theros. And we basically added Uro to that.
Yeah, it was established and hammered out and pretty dynamic and shifting. But there were a lot of decks people tried that just weren't good. And I agree. I have seen people trying these decks that have been like tested and tuned and just ultimately aren't as powerful as the other decks that exist in the format. And that's fine. I think that every time there's a shakeup in Modern or Pioneer, people just play the decks that they love, their pet decks. I'm no different. I played my like mono blue devotion deck that I love to death with Leyline of Anticipation on Monday, and it didn't go very well, but I had a good time. And it's always kind of a magical time for me, just seeing everybody play their pet deck, and people will start losing, and then the format will shake up eventually.
Yeah, I mean, if you really just love playing Teemer Energy and you miss that standard, this is the best time to play it, because even though it's true, you probably know that once the format settles, it will not be part of the tier one. Other people are trying tier 3 decks also.
Exactly. This is the time to play your bad pet deck brew when nobody else knows what's good. Just get in there, get your 3 and 2, and get out of there.
So then the question becomes, what do we think is going to be good in this metagame? So I know you played all day today. I don't know how many leagues you played, 4 or 5?
Yeah, I played 4 leagues today.
And then I think you played yesterday once the ban went live in the afternoon. So you've got, you know, probably as much experience as anybody, 5 or 6-ish leagues in Pioneer. Obviously, without, you know, serious challenges and things on the weekends, we have no established metagame. But what has looked good to you so far? You said Wilderness Wreck is a shell that you had been impressed with?
Yeah, so today I 5-0'd with Blue-Green Wilderness Reclamation. I kind of popularized a different version that was playing the Scarab God in like the old Pioneer. And that deck was really cool and it was fun to build.
Yeah, we love that deck. We played that deck.
It was really cool, but I played this version today, and I think I can pretty confidently say this is the superior Reclamation deck. This version is playing Sublime Epiphany to combo with Torrential Gearhulk. It's not a combo is a word that a lot of people like to nitpick, but you basically never lose the game every time you Gearhulk an Epiphany or you Epiphany a Gearhulk. Super, super powerful interaction. Sublime Epiphany, for those of you who don't know, it's the M21 Cryptic Command. It has 5 modes. You can choose to counter a spell, counter an activated ability or triggered ability, copy a creature you control, return a non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and draw a card. And you can choose any number of those 5 modes. So when you copy a Torrential Gearhulk, you get to cast the Sublime Epiphany again. If there's another Epiphany in your graveyard, you get to do it again. You often end up with 15 power, counter the spell they cast, draw 3 cards, bounce all their permanents. It's really, really powerful, and I've been surprised with just how it goes way over the top of what most people in Pioneer are doing. I'm also playing 4 Shark Typhoon, which is my new favorite Magic card, and it's just great in a Wilderness Reclamation deck. You can copy the Shark tokens with Sublime Epiphany. You can. I'm also just hard casting Shark Typhoon a lot of the time, and then and making an 8/8 Shark for 2 mana with Dig Through Time. I've been really, really liking this deck. It's something I'm going to continue to work on and tune. I also played Mono Green Devotion today with Karn the Great Creator, which is a deck that I absolutely loved back in the day. It was a fun brew to work on that I felt had game against the combo decks. You know, this deck did lose Walking Ballista, which is a pretty big loss, but you gained Oath of Nissa, and you still have a ton of really, really powerful Karn tutor targets, Sky Sovereign, God Pharaoh's Statue, Pithing Needle, Heart of Kieran. And I've also 5-0'd with that deck today. I think it is it's going to be good and going to continue to be good. I played a couple of other brews. I played Blue-White Control, and I felt like I probably wanted to wait until the metagame shakes up a little bit to revisit the list. I went 3-2, but I feel like I just needed to have a better idea of what the metagame looked like. And I also played a Jeskai Fires deck, like a Jeskai Luka Agent of Treachery deck that felt fine and like just kind of a obvious good deck in the format.
I know I saw Reed Duke and I think Canister both playing Sultai Delirium in preliminaries this morning.
Yeah, I expect those decks to be very, very good and popular, but I also kind of feel like those decks are pretty beatable. I think that they stumble on their mana a lot, so they can be vulnerable to aggro decks, and I think that like the Green Devotion deck is usually good against them. The Jeskai Fires deck have a lot of game. The Reclamation decks can go over the top, but still like a good deck in the format.
I played a bunch of Sultai Delirium, obviously pre-ban, but my impression of everyone's like, oh, you know, they banned all these cards. What about Uro? I actually think Uro and Pioneer is pretty reasonable. It's not like Modern where you fill up your graveyard with fetch lands and these cheap spells. You don't just get to do it by playing Magic.
I agree completely. Like you have to be playing a ton of Cyclers. You have to have cards like Satyr Wayfinder. And if you're playing other cards that are in on the graveyard, then your deck as a whole is more vulnerable to graveyard hate as opposed to like the Modern Uro decks where really graveyard hate is just shutting off Uro and they just get to cycle it anyways. But yeah, I agree completely. Fetch lands make so many cards more powerful than they're intended to be. Mystic Sanctuary, Arkham's Astrolabe, Uro, Dig Through Time, Fatal Push. And I think Uro's kind of just fine in Pioneer. There's also lots of answers to it in the format that aren't as popular in Pioneer. Like Narset is a really good playable Pioneer card. There's lots of exile-based removal in this format. I think Uro is probably not going to be too dominant, but will be a part of the metagame.
And the mana in Pioneer is bad. I mean, you're playing blue-green, like that Black Splash, you are playing a ton of shock lands. You're playing lands that come into play tapped if they're your fourth land. So you can't play Uro on time. So yeah, it's not just this free splash. Everyone's like, well, Pioneer is less powerful than Modern. And, you know, Uro is the same card. Why is it should just be, you know, it's very good in Modern. Why isn't it crushing Pioneer? And I think for all the reasons that Spike and I are mentioning, it's just a very reasonable card. It's very powerful. I'm not saying it's not powerful, but I never felt like I was just effortlessly getting Uro into play and beating them. The other thing is the cheap interaction. in a lot of these colors, you know, white doesn't have that. So you can't just like Uro play one land and be able to interact with your opponent. You're just giving them free reign for a full turn that turn on your turn three. So yeah, I think it's just very fair. I think a lot of players are going to be attracted to it because it does have that kind of Jund feel. So players like Reed Duke who love Jund in Modern, and they're going to be drawn to it, and that's fine. I think it's just another one of many good decks in the format. I don't think we have to worry about it. Why isn't Uro not banned? It just, we haven't seen those results yet.
I'll take the other side. I think that this deck will be a true tier one deck, possibly tier zero. I think that one of the things that makes it not super busted out of the gate is that just like the blue-white deck, this deck is a bit of a mid-range control deck that really needs to nail its slots for what it expects to play against. Whether that be the number of Jace Friend's Prodigies or right ratio of removal that hits the threats, or whether you want, you know, cards like Ishkana or Emrakul, the Promised End, as your high end, and how you kind of tune this mid-range package will depend on what you're expecting to face. And the deck was one of the top decks before the combo decks really took over, and they used Uro to beat aggressive decks kind of pretty effortlessly, I thought. Whenever I saw Runeclaw Barrage streaming mono red, she would get incredibly depressed whenever she ran into Uro decks. And it's like, there's nothing you can do to mono red to make it beat Uro decks. But we'll see.
I do think that they can start playing Jace Rin's Prodigy again. You know, before the best combo deck was Inverter and it just happened to play four Fatal Push. So it was an easy card to sort of cut or reduce. But if you're worried about these like blue white decks going over the top of them, a lot of times their cheap interaction is four Sensor and four Azorius Charm. Neither of those cards interacts very well with a turn two Jace Rin's Prodigy on the play. So to your point, Damon, maybe as they, you know, start slotting in that, that's a big threat that only Seal Away from blue-white can interact with cheaply.
I agree. I'm really interested to see how these decks evolve. Canister and Reed are excellent, excellent rock mages, and I look forward to seeing how these lists shape up.
Was Canister just really bitter? Because I know he was actually an Inverter lover. You know, he is one of the few people who really loved to play it. He loved the intricacies of it. It did have very unique interactions. Obviously, I think people did get better against playing against it because there are a bunch of unintuitive ways that you have to attack it. And I think he liked that it was, you know, it really rewarded a deep understanding of the deck, which he obviously had. So hopefully he wasn't too sad.
He was in my chat today. I had a hard time getting a read on him, as I always do. But I do think that he would have preferred for Pioneer to stay closer to how it was. But I doubt he's too broken up over it.
It is interesting. One of the complaints that a lot of pros had leading up to the Pro Tour before Theros was printed was that it was this Mana Elf format. You know, there's no way to catch up if you're not playing Mana Elf on turn one. Mm-hmm. Other than Mono Green, which wasn't even a deck that they were talking about at the time. They were talking about like green-black monsters and green-red monsters. We aren't really talking about those Llanowar Elf decks. So I think that again sort of shows how interesting the format is. At least, like you say now, it's in an inquit, sort of incomplete stage. But we're not talking about this, it just being this tempo-centric, you know, mulligan tier Llanowar Elf. You have to be on the play to win every game. And we just described a bunch of decks that, I mean, you're not playing any Llanowar Elves in your Wilderness Reclamation deck or your blue-white deck, etc.
I think it was kind of like that at the very beginning, but the very, very beginning when you still had Leyline of Abundance and Once Upon a Time. And with Once Upon a Time, you could almost guarantee a turn one Elf in all your opening hands. And I do. The elves are really, really dominant at that point, but I think that they're kept in check by Shock, Fatal Push, and Supreme Verdict for the most part.
So those are the bans in Pioneer. I think everyone's just really excited. It feels like we have a whole new format to explore, basically. And sort of the promise of Pioneer, at least to me, as I understood it, and for a while I misunderstood it, obviously, because Wizards didn't agree, but now they've come back to agreeing, was this format where it was basically fair. There's no free spells. There's no turn four wins. And so I think we're kind of back to the spirit of what people wanted. They don't want it to be combo-centric. Obviously, Wizards heard that. They banned most of the combos, but not all. Like Spike mentioned, there's still a few combos out there. Are there any cards that you sort of felt were soft banned, Everett, that you're looking to play now? Like a card like Glorybringer is one we've talked about jokingly sort of being soft banned in the format.
Abrupt Decay is the big one. I think Abrupt Decay was one of the best cards in the format pre-Theros. And then the combo decks that emerged were all pretty good against Abrupt Decay. And so I had a black-green rock deck that I really, really liked. And I'm excited to play that deck again. Besides that, I don't think there's anything too particular I'm trying to or I, you know, there's no particular one card that I'm looking forward to play. I guess it's more so just various decks. But I big agree with Glorybringer. Glorybringer is a great card, and I think that when Glorybringer is one of the best cards in the format probably looks pretty good.
Lots of Sharknado archetypes in your future, perhaps.
Yeah, I played three of my four decks I played today had four Shark Typhoon in it. I do think the card is just great. It's incredibly versatile for a 6-mana enchantment, and it can fill a lot of different roles, from win condition to token enabler for Luka to big mid-range threat in the Reclamation decks. I really, really like the card. I've been playing it a ton in Modern, and I'm excited to find various homes for it in Pioneer. Just like my favorite cards.
That you've purchased several thousand copies and are trying to inflate the price to sell them off for a profit.
I always disclose when I buy cards. I have not purchased a single copy of Shark Typhoon. I actually, even playing them a ton in Modern, I saw that they were $5 and thought that was a lot for like an in-print standard rare, and didn't buy them, and now they're like $10. But no, I'll buy them at some point, but I don't own any copies.
There will be a time when we get to play Paper Magic again, hopefully. So
fingers crossed.
The idea of like shuffling cards up actually has been sounding like really attractive to me. I find myself thinking about doing it like during work conference calls or whatever.
Yeah, I've been I sold out of my paper collection years ago, but I've been buying back into like just Modern Magic over the last few months or so, and I'm very excited to one day get to use those cards.
So you mentioned Modern. Now, Modern is a format where you've, I think, at first kind of almost like memeishly playing Shark Typhoon, and then it just turned out to be great, and you were playing like a blue-red deck that couldn't be boiled or was itself playing boil or something.
Yeah.
And you were having great success with that. I mean, it wasn't a meme. It was a good deck.
Yeah, I think that deck was super, super good in the Tier 0 Arkham's Astrolabe format, where not only was boil just a super good card to be on, but everybody who wasn't playing the Astrolabe deck was playing boil. And so playing the blue-red deck that was playing no islands. One thing, I was very impressed by the mana base. The mana base was often came into play tapped or mostly untapped and didn't deal you any damage, which was pretty big, and you could just cast all of your spells on curve and you were boil proof, which was really sweet. I think before I played that blue red deck with Shark Typhoon, I just had like a blue black control deck with Shark Typhoon together, and I think it started just after the not the PT I didn't I wasn't queued for the PT finals, but the PT before that I played a blue-white Yorion control deck that Gabriel Nassif was working on, and we were kind of talking about it, and I was playing Tails End to beat my Reclamation opponent Shark Typhoon, because the big deal was they would Shark Typhoon and attack your Teferis and Narset. And we both just agreed I should just be playing Shark Typhoon instead in that standard deck, and I really just had a moment where I felt like I just super underrated the card, and then I started playing it in Modern, and I was right. I had very much underrated the card, and it is an excellent win condition in these control decks. When you're just leaving up all your mana at instant speed every turn, you can Mana Leak Reman, Snapcaster, Archmage Charm, or Shark Typhoon. And just that versatility, the fact that it fits everywhere on your curve in the late game, you can just hard cast it and go way over the top of your opponent. The card is fantastic, and it's also like just very fair. You know, it's super fun to play with. I don't think people are hating on it. And I think it's my favorite card from recent memory.
Yeah, it plays out weirdly like a blue green Sun Zenith to me. Just the way it kind of fits into your curve. It's a cheap thing to do early.
A blue Sun Zenith, if you will.
Well, that card already exists, of course.
Yeah.
So do you think, is it boil control is not quite as good post Astrolabe ban?
I think that it might be a decent metagame call, but that's what that kind of deck is. It's just when a format becomes very homogenized, I would only ever play a deck like that in a premier event. That's, you know, GPs, PTQs, PTs, those are the events where people don't like to brew, and the metagames are very homogenized. And if you have the correct read, that's when a very focused brew can really be successful. But a deck like the Boil Control deck is not going to be good for every week of Modern.
I will say I've been surprised. I'm not a religious watcher, but the number of times you hardcast it in Modern, it's a thing people don't think about. It's a 6-mana permanent. In some ways, it's better hardcast in Modern than it is in Standard, because you have the free Force of Negation. no one is playing Elspeth Conquers Death, etc. So other than maybe the occasional Assassin's Trophy, it just goes unchecked. So you just, your ops and everything else just start pooping out little fellows.
Yeah, it just goes way over the top of the modern format. You know, standard is more equipped to deal with six band of permanence than modern is. And I mean, you do cycle it 9 times out of 10, but your control decks get to the late game, and hard casting it just is more powerful than most decks can compete with.
So since we're on the topic of modern, how are you finding the format to be post-ban? Did you agree with the ban? I know you sort of have given your thoughts on the Dive Down podcast, but just a quick overview of that, and then sort of what you expected to happen post-Astrolabe ban, and then what you have seen post-Astrolabe ban.
So I did like the ban of Astrolabe. That was my proposed change for the format. That's what I wanted to see happen. I was really liking modern even before Astrolabe was banned, but I did think the Uro piles were too good, and I think that modern has been really, really good since Astrolabe ban. I've been playing a lot of Stoneforge Mystic decks, some Blue Moon, some Jund, some Sultai control decks, and I really, really like it. I think the format is diverse and changing, and maybe in the best shape it's been in years. I really am very pro modern at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree. After the Faithless Looting ban, I think, you know, Dan's not on the podcast, so we can say this freely without him scowling. Between the Faithless Looting ban and Astrolabe being banned, it feels like we're really at this non-homogenized, interactive, you know, ships passing in daylight, taking broadsides at each other format. And hopefully Pioneer will also be in a great shape, and Magic, as we know, will be totally revitalized.
Fingers crossed. I think Faithless Looting was the best card in Modern for like 2 years straight. It was just so, so good at what it did. And the last time Modern has been like so focused on fair Magic and mid-range decks, I think the last time I remember it being like this was like 2013 when, you know, or maybe 2014, 2015, where Twin and Pod were the best decks. I feel like it hasn't really felt like this since then.
You look at these modern tournament results, you do just see all kinds of variety. I mean, Goblins is a deck now. The Blue-Red Prowess deck, which David and I were kind of suspicious of, it keeps turning up good results. You can still play Eldrazi Tron always. Control decks are still good. You're starting to see Shadow come back. So, yeah, I mean, whatever you sort of thought modern could be, I think you guys are both... If we all disagree, then someone's wrong. But if we all agree, we have to be right. So, yeah, I think modern is in a great place.
I agree completely. I would really recommend checking it out if you have loved modern in the past and have been scared off by some of the evolutions of the format.
So I think that's kind of a catch-up on the format as it exists now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about our flashback card of last week, which was Juriel, Monvuli Recluse. And Spike got a league in Modern with his Teamer Brew. So we'll have him break that down for you as well.
Welcome back. Our card from last week was Juriel, Monvuli Recluse. And just as a quick reminder, she came out of M21 and won in a green for a 1/2 legendary human druid. And she reads that whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 2/2 green cat creature token and 4 green. Until end of turn, creatures you control have base power and toughness XX, where X is the number of cards in your hand. And so we came out of the week with a number of brews, and we played a lot of them. And in spite of all that, we think that Spike has more Juriel experience than both of us combined. So, Spike, tell us about your most recent forays into Modern with our Monvuli Queen.
Sure. I've only ever played her in Modern. I haven't had a chance to try her out in Pioneer, but I probably will at some point. You know, I was thinking a lot about shells for Juriel, and I think the kind of obvious spot that a lot of people wanted to try her out in were the Uro piles with Astrolabe. You know, obviously that's banned now, but Uro, Astrolabe, Ice Fang. I went a different direction. There's a card I've always wanted to be good of one mind. It's a 3-mana spell from Ikora, and it draws 2 cards, and it only costs 1 mana if you have both a human and a non-human in play. And I've always really, really liked that Of One Mind. It works very well with Young Pyromancer because it's an instant. It makes a non-human token, and you can get that, you know, that ball rolling to get that Pyromancer value. But the problem is you only have four Young Pyromancers in your deck, and I think a card like Monastery Mentor is too expensive, so I just kind of, you know, I never really put the Of One Mind Young Pyromancer deck together. But Joreal is another two mana card that makes a non-human token, works well with Of One Mind. Of One Mind triggers Joreal. And I put a Teemer deck together. It's kind of a mid-rangey deck that's playing Force of Negation, Archmage's Charm, Serum Visions, Op, Lightning Bolt, Snapcaster Mage. And I think the deck was pretty good. I played it on stream for a couple days in a row. Other people picked it up and they started playing a more low to the ground version with Delver. And some people picked up some trophies, which was really cool. I just decided to take it a different way to see if that was more viable. I put Huntmaster of the Fells to give the deck a little more top end. And Huntmaster of the Fells is really good against the Ponza deck in Modern. It's good against the Burn decks as well. And it works well with Of One Mind because it puts a human and a non-human in play. And Huntmaster is always played pretty well in blue decks with a lot of counter spells, since you can just pass the turn, flip your Huntmaster, cast a couple spells, flip it back. I thought that tech was okay, but my takeaway at the end of the league was the deck was probably better positioned being lower to the ground with Delver of Secrets. Just kind of can't beat that one mana threat, you know?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting build. The only green card you were splashing before you added the Huntmaster is Joreal. So you did kind of bend the deck around getting that, we call it Rule of Eight. You're playing the seven effects that turn on your Of One Mind. You have the eight cheap cantrips, so on turn three, you're very likely to trigger either Young Pyromancer or Joreal. Yeah, it's a really interesting shell. I think one of the keys to these decks is that Ethergust is just such a great sideboard card. Every deck that's playing blue is playing four of them. You know, it gets around Veil of Summer. It affects permanent, so you don't get hosed by Blood Moon, etc.
Gets around Cavern of Souls.
That's a big one for the Goblins matchup and the Titan matchup. The card is really, really good.
How are you liking Spell Snare? I see you play it a lot and other people don't play it as much as you do.
So. I never leave home without my Spell Snares, more or less. I really think almost every blue deck should be playing two, or, you know, fair mid-rangey control deck. Stoneforge Mystic is incredibly, incredibly popular at the moment. I'm playing mostly Stoneforge Mystics these days and I'm having a ton of fun. I'm putting swords on Shark Typhoon tokens and it's a great time. And also, Spell Snare picked up a lot of traction against the E-tron decks because they're playing Maze Mind Tome. They're playing four Maze Mind Tomes, and that card is really, really good against the blue decks, and being able to counter it is super-duper important. Jund is on the uptick, Burn is on the uptick, Spell Snare is good in those matchups. It's not great against the Titan decks, and it's not... It is either incredibly good against the Cavern of Souls tribal decks, or it's terrible. Just depends on if they draw Cavern of Souls. If they don't draw it, it's one of your best cards. If they do, it doesn't do anything like any other counterspell, but I would, if you're playing a blue fair deck in Modern, I'd really recommend playing two Spell Snares right now.
How are you finding Joreal specifically? Do you ever activate her six mana activated ability with all to buff up your 1/1 elemental tokens?
Yeah, I do. It actually has won me many games. I feel like a lot of my opponents don't know that she has an activated ability, and I actually didn't even realize it either until my chat reminded me. I think that Joreal is actually not as powerful as Young Pyromancer, but is pretty close to that bar. And so I'd be mostly looking to play Joreal as like a complement to other synergy-based things you have going on, rather than Joreal is so powerful, I just want to play her in every deck. This is my staple. This is the card I'm starting with. But Joreal, I think, makes the cut when it's turning on your Of One Mind, or if it's like a really effective sideboard card in the control mirror. I think that's where she's going to shine, but I don't think she's, you know, Tarmogoyf, Stoneforge Mystic, level power level or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree that she requires more support in your deck construction than even Young Pyromancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and free draw effects, they're pretty chintzy about printing. They do print free instant or sorcery effects from time to time. So Force of Negation getting a token is always a nice feeling.
If only Gitaxian Probe was still legal. I guess there's Street Wraith, and I messed around with some Street Wraith like Uro, Death Shadow, Joreal, Shells, but I couldn't really find a list that I liked very much.
Yeah, we had kind of proposed a very speculative Sultai Death Shadow list where she was kind of taking the place of Tarmogoyf, you know, the theory is, of course, you play her on turn two and turn her on. We didn't really get around to playing it, but I don't think we were that encouraged by it in general. I think the strength of Death Shadow really is the shadow itself and these other cards.
I agree. I got super stuck.
Yeah, the power level is just not quite there to justify all these hoops you're jumping through.
I agree completely. Very cool card. Very cool card. A card that I think just flew under the radar until people started trying it out in Standard. And then, you know, it has a lot of the aspects that Eternal formats like. It's a two-mana creature that can generate a lot of value and synergizes with cantrips and stuff. I could actually see the card being potentially Legacy playable. You know, green is becoming better and better in Legacy these days. And I'd be interested to see if she finds a home there. You could also turn her on your opponent's turn with Brainstorm, which is kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Just a thought. I haven't been playing a ton of Legacy these days. I usually play Ant Ad Nauseam Tendrils when I do, but maybe I'll brew with her in Legacy. We'll see.
Okay, real live action happening here. Sylvan Library, another card that interacts with very favorably with Jelreel.
And that Arkham's Astrolabe card is still legal, I guess. For some reason, I'm in the ban Arkham's Astrolabe in Legacy camp.
Oh, camp?
I don't think that it's probably too good, but I also think that it makes the 3 and 4 color mid-range mirrors that were really fun and interesting, and like your deck building was always very interesting. I think it makes those matchups really homogenized, and it's those decks are so much harder to punish with Wasteland, and then they can just play the best spells in every color on curve, and I don't know. I know this is kind of a tangent, but I don't like Astrolabe very much in Legacy.
It's funny you say that because we were talking about this a week ago when we were talking about the Modern ban. And when I tell my friends, oh, you know, I'm a co-host on this podcast, they're like, well, why would anyone brew a deck in Magic? Why wouldn't you just all play the best cards? And Astrolabe really says, yeah, that's what you should do. Why?
Yeah.
It's the deck construction that, you know, my non-Magic playing friends would support. Why not just play all the best cards? And it does let you do that oftentimes. It did let you do that in Modern as well. Yeah. You're playing Uro, somehow you still getting to play Field of Ruin, but you were also always turning on your Sanctuary, and you were never having to make any choices. So when you remove all that tension...
Yeah, just like every other incredibly good enabler in Magic, it does too much for too little mana.
Yeah, I have to say though, my problem with Legacy is more that there was a while where if you were super sick of Oko in Standard and Modern... You could flee the Oko Menace by playing some Legacy, where there was like a couple Okos, but the format was much more actually kind of ruined by Ren and Six at that point in time. But now it turns out that if you go to Modern and Standard, you do get to dodge Oko, then you go play Legacy, and your opponent's like, Oko, and you're like, I'm so sick of this card. I really just don't want to play against Oko in my life really anymore if I can avoid it, and Legacy doesn't really give me that luxury.
While that is true, I do think that cards like Oko are soft to the combo decks in Legacy. Not that there aren't answers for it, but there have always, I feel like, been a ton of 3-mana annoying cards in Legacy, specifically like Leovold, True Name Nemesis, and now there's Oko and Uro, which are probably better than, you know, these other annoying cards.
On a logical power level assessment, I totally agree with you. I don't think Oko is broken in Legacy. It's just I just don't like the play patterns.
I agree. I think Oko was a mistake. I think it just... I think the plus two should be a plus one, and the plus one should be a minus one, and the card would probably be fine.
But it was 2019. Yeah. It was a different time.
2019 was a wild, wild ride. I liked a lot about 2019. There was, you know, maybe like 6 or 7 design mistakes, but I liked a lot of stuff that happened in 2019.
Yeah, there was no virus flying around. It was just it was the before times, really.
Rose-colored glasses for 2019 and the Hogak summer.
So we whipped up a few decks to try out in Pioneer, and a lot of my testing, unfortunately, was pre-ban, but I got a league in after the bans, and so did Damon. So we brewed up this kind of, I don't know, what do you want to call it, Damon? A synergistic sort of rock deck, black-green deck?
Yeah, it's a reasonable name.
It basically tried to take advantage of Unbridled Growth, which you can cast on turn one, and then you get your cat on turn two with Jelreel. In addition, it was playing Footfall Crater, which combos both with Jelreel and Aphemia. So you kind of had these two cards that were just kicking out all these tutus, and then sort of at the top of the curve, you had Lurrus and Tessin Champion, and we were trying to take advantage of the newly unbanned Oath of Nissa, which is an enchantment that triggers the Tessin Champion. It sends itself to the graveyard to be rebought with Lurrus as kind of a very powerful sort of ponder effect every turn. Damon, you had a little bit less success with me than me, so I will let you have the floor first on your thoughts on the deck.
Yeah, so the way I would really describe this deck is that it is this green-black low-to-the-ground engine deck, and the engines it runs are Setessan Champion, Lurrus of the Dream Den, Jolrael, and Aphemia the Cacophony. And somehow all these cards form engines that rotate around Unbridled Growth specifically. So if you have Unbridled Growth and Setessan Champion, you get to draw a card off the champion, then you draw a card off Unbridled Growth to hopefully dig you towards more enchantments. If you have Unbridled Growth plus Lurrus out, you just get to draw an extra card a turn. It's this sort of build your own Mithra's Bauble, or sort of worse Mithra's Bauble, but still works. If you have
the homeless man's Mithra's Bauble.
Sure, sure. If you have Jolrael out, then Unbridled Growth gives you a second draw. If you have Aphemia, you can sack your Unbridled Growth and then make a 2-2 zombie. So somehow everything kind of comes down around Unbridled Growth as the real killer card. But somehow, by filling this deck with cards like Footfall Crater, this works with both Aphemia and Jolrael, and not really Setessan Champion and Lurrus. Oath of Nissa works with Setessan Champion and sort of Aphemia, sort of Jolrael, and sort of Lurrus if you have multiples to put them in the graveyard. And then we have these kind of deadweight cards and other such things, and Lurrus is kind of just good with the whole deck being pretty cheap. So yeah, I took it through a league of the brand new Pioneer, and I went 2-3, and after thinking about the league, I was like kind of down on the deck at first, and I liked a lot more just in hindsight. I watched some of the VODs from my games, and one of my first loss was against Blue-Black Control. They just did this, Thoughtseize, push, eliminate, dig through time, Gear Hulk, and they kind of got good draws where like I Thoughtseize them, their hand was totally blank. And in the turn before I killed them, they top decked a Gear Hulk to flashback a Dig Through Time and totally take the game. I beat Teemer Wreck 2-1. I lost to Blue Red Prowess, but they had really good draws both games where they just had a really good blend of spells and lands and creatures. I feel like I really had game, especially if I could have found a Scavenging Ooze and gotten that to work, or even a Soul Guide Lantern to make the Bedlam Revelers not work. I lost a close one to Blue Paradoxical Outcome, where I think I punted in game two and I would have probably won. And then I beat Sultai Dredge quite handily off of the back of they got a bunch of amalgams going and I just went bigger with all these cats and things like that.
So Spike, we're going to maybe make you do a little live action deck doctor here. You're seeing this deck for the first time. You, like you said, you are kind of a fan of the sort of black green rock deck in Pioneer. What are your thoughts of this sort of approach to this kind of deck?
I actually messed around a little bit with Lurrus plus Unbridled Growth in Pioneer back before the companion nerf, and I thought the engine was cool. However, I was of the opinion that you had like a lot of cool engine ways to draw two cards a turn, but you had a hard time translating those cards into meaningful board and just card advantage in general. Like, you were lacking 8 discard spells, just 1-for-1 your opponent while you're drawing 2 cards a turn. You didn't have Liliana of the Veil to just turn any card in your hand to, discard that card to make your opponent discard a card as well. And I just was feeling like I was, other decks in the format were just going way over the top of what I was doing. And just looking at this list, I think that is going to continue to be true. You have a lot of very cool engine cards that can be disrupted pretty easily and also are probably going to be able to be gone over the top of by the Devotion decks, by Uro, by Supreme Verdict, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, Yorion, Fires. It was always just such a nightmare matchup for these Lurrus decks, and I don't feel like this fixes that problem. And I'm not sure that there is a way to do it. I tried like splashing like white and getting like having a traverse package. I tried playing counter spells. I tried playing red for like Kroxa, but I wasn't a huge fan of any of those, and I'm not sure that this strategy offers too much or anything really different.
So the deck doctor finds no heartbeat in the patient.
The deck is very cool. I do like it. But as far as its position in the metagame, I don't feel a pulse, I think.
I swear if you could play eight Unbridled Growths, this deck would be like
actually. I agree completely. Like, just the another enablers, Footfall Craters, Oath of Nissa just aren't exactly what you want.
Yeah, and so I kind of have to agree. I have a record posted there. I think I went 8-1 against non-Urion decks, and then I went 0-5 in parentheses 0-10 against every deck revealing Urion. And that was Urion of any flavor. You want to play Niv, you got me. You want to play Esper, you want to play Sultai Wilderness Reclamation, Urion. And I also have to say, this is just an old complaint, but these Urion decks are just so tilting because it's 80 cards. Somehow you get stuck on lands and they don't. And you're just like, you know, they only have like four Wilderness Recs, but they of course have it on turn three.
As 80 cards is really not that. I found that you really don't sacrifice that much power level in 80 cards. But where you really sacrifice it is your sideboard. Your sideboard is a lot weaker in 80 cards.
True. And I think hopefully we're hoping is that Pioneer is much less about, you know, drawing those one or two silver bullets in your sideboard. So maybe Urion, as these, you know, decks kind of try to go over the top of each other in these mid-range mirrors, is the way to go. Because that, if the format starts to slow down, you don't have to worry about these combo kills. Or if you just want to beat the crap out of some idiot trying to play Joriel, maybe that's the way to go.
And Fires of Invention gets around the companion nerf pretty well. So I think that there's...
Yeah, and so you said you tried a Jeskai Fighters deck, and it felt reasonably
powerful. Yeah, it was my worst performing deck of the day. I don't know if my build was very good. I think I just probably... I wasn't playing any sweepers in the main deck. I was kind of warping. I had a Jeskai version, and I was playing Chain to the Rocks in the main deck. And I felt like Chain to the Rocks was really castable, the way I built the mana base. But I also felt Chain to the Rocks was probably just worse than having sweepers in the main deck. And so going forward, I probably would just, you know, be playing some Deafening Clarion or Anger or Verdict or Sweltering Suns instead of these Chain to the Rocks.
To your point, Damon, I really agree. Like, the best cards in the deck, those opening draws just feel so different than the other times your deck plays out. So when you play like Jewelry on 2, draw an extra card, make a cat, then on 3, you know, you play Setessan Champion, and then, or even like you play the Mox Amber, so you have 4 mana on turn 3, and all of a sudden you're doing your thing, and it's just like you're killing them on turn 5, and you're like, wow, this deck is sweet. Or when you get that engine going, those games take so long, you're winning for such a huge percentage of the time, the deck feels powerful. But yeah, when you're not doing that, it just feels really hopeless. And the openings where you're like Footfall Cratering on turn 3 as just a terrible opt is not that good.
Yeah, it's like the strength of these rock decks is that you have all these cheap one for ones. I think any one threat you resolve is going to be very powerful on its own without the synergies, and you're disrupting your opponent's synergies. But this deck is a synergy based rock deck, which I feel like kind of inherently is just kind of antithetical to how you want to be approaching building decks like this, if that makes sense.
I think honestly the real thing is just that the synergies don't quite get there. Oath of Nissa doesn't trigger Jolrael, doesn't really go to the graveyard for Ephemia, doesn't go to the graveyard for Lurrus, can't find your post sideboard duresses. And somehow actually Oath of Nissa was the card that really let the deck down for me. I whiffed multiple times with it, and that was actually, you know, it's pretty bad when you whiff off that card. And somehow, if there was like a better enchantment to fill that void, the deck was capable of doing pretty powerful things. It had, through Jolrael herself, could get a pretty good endgame going where she would help your board go wide, perhaps with the help of Ephemia or just drawing a lot of creatures through the course of your engine getting going. And then all of a sudden you can get up to 10 cards in hand because you find your Unbridled Growth, you cash them on your lands, and then the turn you want to Alpha Strike, you can draw up to 10 cards in hand, going from 7 to 8 off your draw step to 10 off the Unbridled Growths, et cetera, et cetera. And then you all of a sudden your opponent can block 3 of your 5 creatures and they die.
Yeah, she definitely was like threatening that overrun like effect a lot for me. That was how I won a lot of games.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, yeah, I agree that this deck has a kind of fatal flaws against Supreme Verdict decks, in particular, things like that.
And I think you made the great point in the notes here, Damon, that because it's so synergy driven, it's hard to sideboard in, because once you kind of like pull the string a little bit on the sweater, you know, Weezer style, it starts to come undone a bit. So
yeah, because in particular the synergies are really held together by a thread.
Yes.
And so reducing any of the numbers can really mess them up.
So if you can dodge Urion and everyone going big, and hopefully they're not listening, they're not watching Spike's stream where they're playing Wilderness Reclamation and Blue White Control, then maybe this is something fun to do. But yeah, until Unbridled Growth 2.0 gets printed, maybe this has to sit on the back burner. I also played like a tricked out Sultai Delirium list that was maximizing ways to trigger Jolriel. Just as a little background spike, Dan loves 4-mana Teferi and has been arguing with us about how great it is since it's printing. There were, Damon, correct me if I'm wrong, some suggestions, innuendos, that it was better than Jace the Mind Sculptor. Some harsh words were shared on this pod.
You know, no card is better than another card. They're just all different.
Right. Yeah.
Except this one. Jace is actually better than Teferi.
Yeah, even in the synergy. So this was a build that was really trying to maximize. Jolriel was playing 3 4-mana Teferi. It was obviously playing the 4 Uro, and then a Cling to Dust, multiple Tireless Trackers, etc. And it was just fine. You know, it triggered when it triggered. I had a lot of the complaints that I described earlier with Uro. You know, the deck is just a little clunky. There were a lot of times where I was going to, quote unquote, win the game, but you die without getting to kind of deploy all your threats. You end up having to take a lot of damage from your mana base. You can accidentally mill away some of you're only playing a few basic lands for Fabled Passages, so you can't always target those. So, yeah, I mean, I think the sort of the Sultai shell, like Damon is saying, is going to have to evolve to meet the new metagame. That's probably going to involve, you know, really targeting these decks that can go over the top of it, because I think those are the ones that it's not well suited against. I think you can very easily tweak out Sultai to have a good aggro matchup. So I guess my generic impression of Jolriel is that it asks you to do quite a lot. There's not that many cards that just freely draw you cards, especially in Pioneer. It does give you a reasonable payoff, so you kind of need to bend to do what Jolriel is asking you to do without having to bend too much of your deck. And I think that tension has not yet been resolved in a shell that really impresses me.
Fingers crossed, though. The card is really cool. I hope it gets there.
Definitely. Any closing thoughts from you, Damon?
Yeah, I think Jolriel has a lot of promise. I found one thing that just sort of lets her down is that, unlike Young Pyromancer, she's legendary. And this is a bit of a problem, just in the sense that you want to play a lot of her because you're going to maximize your deck to satisfy her trigger. But then you're going to draw a lot of copies of her, which was sometimes the bane of some of my games with a green-black deck.
Yeah, and like Dan pointed out, these other cards that pay you off for drawing an extra card a turn are A, very anemic in general, and B, mostly in the Izzet colors. So you don't kind of have that rule of eight like Spike did in Modern, where you have Young Pyromancer and Jolriel kind of have the same effect. When you cast Opt on turn 3, you're getting paid off for it. The Aphemia was kind of trying to do that, but it's just a very weak card. And, Dan said I should cut from 4 down to less. I played 3 and was like, I could have done with less of this card, honestly. So yeah, we need another reprint of that or a similar Jolriel effect. Since green gets to draw cards now, maybe this is the new Pyromancer.
Yeah, another cheap card draw spell, like a Mishra's Bauble type effect that triggers on your turn. Not that I think they'll ever print something like that again.
Yeah.
If a Gitaxian Probe gets printed, Jolriel gets a lot better.
I always feel like there must be some reprint of Unbridled Growth somewhere in Magic that I just don't know about. Because there's like the one in a green draw card that enchants a land that taps for any color. There's like 2 of those.
A lot of innocuous cards that are potentially very powerful. You know, like Arkham's Astrolabe, I certainly didn't look twice at it when I first read the card, and ends up being an incredibly format warping superstar.
Well, and it's kind of funny looking back. We had a lot of debates on this podcast. Obviously, we were one of the progenitors of 5-mana Niv in Modern about if we should be playing it. And then, you know, quickly became that was the one non-negotiable card. It's like, this is the only card that even makes us want to play this deck. So it's funny how those cards kind of sneak up on you and all of a sudden they're, you can never say no to them.
Yeah.
All right. So the takeaway is hopeful for Jolriel, but I don't think we're there in either format. And we'll have to see what Zendikar brings. I
bunch
never
of combo
know.
Decks, obviously.
Yeah. They should print a bunch of really powerful landfall effects to make your Uro's extra land drops even more effective. So, All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to kind of have a little abbreviated brew session. Like I said, we don't have any new cards for the week, but we'll just talk about maybe some prospective old brews that have been opened up by the bannings. All right, we are back. So like I said, for our brew session, we don't really have any specific cards. I am going to revisit some of the old brews we had that were kind of cool. Damon 5-0'd with like a Narset Days Undoing Notion Thief shell. And now it seems like if other people are kind of going bigger into the control shell, this is a deck that lines up very well against them. Narset, just like Spike was saying, is just a very playable main deck card. It's good against Uro. It's good against the various Teferis, and being able to play flash threats is awesome. And then having that Narset lock, Narset is not a card that's easy to attack in blue white unless you're playing a lot of Shark Typhoons. Not everyone has adopted this tech, so
you should adopt it.
You should. But if you don't, I think this is the exact kind of deck that can take advantage of these other control decks. So that's one way to go. 2 weeks ago, we played, in your absence, Damon, this cool Tome Diviner, Maze Mind Tome, Thing in the Ice, blue-black control list, which was super sweet. And that is the kind of, if it's a more of a, the thing that I find attractive about it is these blue-white decks don't have a way of dealing with creatures easily if they're not attacking. So it's very possible your Tome Diviner just goes the distance. You don't attack in their Azorius Charm. And it just turns into this crazy card advantage engine with the Maze Mind Tome. Those cards are both difficult for blue-white to interact with. Obviously, a little bit easier for different kinds of control shells. So those are two shells I'm looking at trying to exploit. Drawing all these extra cards in these shells is great because, like Spike is saying, Thoughtseize is a card you don't want to play in a hard control shell. But if it's giving you time to set up these kind of narrow interactions, then that's, you know, maybe a place where Thoughtseize can be sort of strong again. These are not game-winning combos, although the Narset deck does have sort of the lock with the Gaia Reach Sanctuary? Gaia Reach Sanatorium? Sanitarium. Any thoughts or impressions on that, Damon?
The Maze Mind Tome deck?
Or going back to the Narset Days Undoing list that you 5-0'd with.
Yeah, so we'll start with the Narset's Narset Days Undoing deck. So that deck just plays a lot of good blue-black cards. And instead of having an inverter finish, it has this sort of Narset plus Days Undoing or Notion Thief plus Days Undoing finish. And somehow, with inverter gone, I could see a variant of this being one of the better ways to take these blue-black control cards. I know Spike mentioned he didn't like Thoughtseize and more of a control deck, but this deck doesn't quite play like a control deck. It has a Splinter Twin-esque thing with this the wheel effect, and that can close a game out in a much faster way than a typical blue-white control deck would, where both players are playing off the top for a long time. Like, you're playing off the top until all of a sudden they have one card in hand, you have seven, and you have a Gaia Reach Sanitarium threatening them to never have any more cards after that. So I would definitely be curious to try this deck out going forward. Just the card quality is high. We'd have to think through, are there any new cards that are worth playing? It is, you know, the 5-0 was quite a while ago at this point, March 19th, 2020. That's ancient history by now.
Well, there's not a new card that I have in mind for this deck, but potentially an old card. In these, like, Narset Days Undoing's deck, I've always kind of disliked how bad Days Undoing is by itself. But there is also Whispering Madness. If you know that card from Gatecrash, it is a cipher spell and says each player discards their hand and draws cards equal to the greatest number of cards discarded this way. And one thing I like about Whispering Madness is if you can get it siphoned onto a Brazen Borrower, you get to do your combo every single turn. And it also isn't a true draw seven, so I feel like it plays a little bit better with Thoughtseize, because if you, like, you know, if you discard your opponent's card with Thoughtseize, then you like half the Days Undoing. Just kind of really tough, but Whispering Madness maybe plays better than that. Four versus three mana is a big deal. I don't know if it would necessarily be better than Days Undoing, but it also doesn't end the turn when it triggers, which is a big deal, and you can do it every turn. It's probably not good, just a thought.
Yeah, I didn't even consider that card. And it does, the end of the turn thing kind of matters for Notion Thief, because a lot of times you end up with all these cards in your hand, you're going straight to discard. So being able to play some of them before you pass a turn would actually be pretty sweet.
Yeah, maybe a split with Days Undoing. You play like one Whispering Madness, two Days Undoing or something like that could be something to look into if you really want to keep tuning the list.
My experience is Days Undoing drawing seven is super important, because even though your opponent's going to go down to a very few cards with Narset out with either of these two cards, Whispering Madness or Days Undoing, drawing seven cards doesn't always win the game when you're playing a lot of weird cards and you have Thoughtseize and things like that, which are no longer all that useful. And so there are games where I'd be surprised at how hard it was to close the game out after that. And that's not like a thing that says like the deck is super weak. It's just that the way these blue-black cards play out can be a little funny sometimes.
I believe that.
But taking a step back towards the Tome Diviner Maze Mind Tome deck, I haven't had a chance to play this yet. I know that you and Mana Symbol both loved this deck and called it a mind-meltingly complex. So maybe one of these times I'll have to take my brain out for a little mind-melting experience.
One of the things I like about it is you kind of have these two cards. They are both synergistic with Tome Diviner, but they are good against other different decks. So Thing in the Ice, obviously very good against aggro decks. It's very easy to flip in this deck. You can flip it on turn three or four. The Maze Mind Tome is very good against control. It's very good against blue decks in general. They don't interact with it easily. It gives you this repeatable card advantage. And with, obviously, Soul Diviner, it's just absolutely insane. And Tome is not just dead, period. You can just scry a bunch of times and gain four life against aggro if that's needed. You can kind of tweak your larger package as needed. And again, you kind of get back a bunch of sideboard space. I was having to sacrifice against other control decks because I was having to play, like, Sphere, et cetera, et cetera. You can kind of tweak out your list to combat some of these decks that are trying to go over the top of you.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern with it in the new undefined meta is just that when a bunch of combo decks get banned out of a format, things tend to coalesce on creature decks and anti-creature decks, and even the creature decks are going to be playing a lot of removal. And so I would suspect that these Soul Diviners are going to die quite frequently. One card I've actually found to be pretty good is Omen of the Dead somehow. If you have these important 2-drops that tend to die, that card is better than it looks. I play that in Blue-Black Slither Wisp in Modern, even, and 5-0'd with it, of all things.
I will say having 3 toughness is legit. A lot of the red effects in Pioneer don't do 3 damage. You know, it lives through Stomp, it lives through Shock.
It also blocks most of the mono-black aggro creatures really well, which I think is important.
Yeah. Yeah, it dies a Fatal Push, obviously, like every every creature that basically sees play does. But, yeah, anyway, just so something worth revisiting. So we do have a few questions here for Spike. He said he would be nice enough to answer some questions from our Discord. So you are a bit of an avowed control player, so I think you are the person to answer this one. Grixicism is asking, do you feel like main deck Wrath and control are a sacred cow for modern deck building? It seems like half the decks, like Miracles, always jam them, he means all four, and others, like Blue Moon, prefer to only play spot removal. And maybe Anger's in the side. Should more control decks relegate their Supreme Verdicts, etc., to their sideboards?
That's a great question. It's actually been a topic of conversation on my stream a decent bit recently. Yes, I do think Wraths to some extent are sacred cows. It seems like a lot of people think when you build your control deck, you just have to have Wraths. I do think for blue-white control decks, Wraths are pretty important because that's your good removal. Like Path to Exile is often not going to cut it on its own in your control decks, and you need some mass removal. But decks like Grixis, Blue Moon, they get access to better spot removal and better spot removal early, don't need those Wraths as much. And now that control decks are getting to play really powerful threats to the board, like Uro, like Stoneforge Mystic, like Shark Typhoon, you just don't need sweepers as much because you're also playing to the board in a way you just weren't in the past. And so I've been playing a Sultai control deck a little bit recently. I have a couple Plague Engineers in my sideboard as a sweeper type effect, but no true sweepers, and I haven't missed it. I've been playing a ton of Shark Blade, with, you know, Stoneforge Mystic, Shark Typhoon. No Supreme Verdict in the 75, and I haven't missed it. And so I do think a lot of people think that when you're playing these decks, you just need a sweeper. But really, if you're going to build your control decks correctly, you need to have an understanding of the meta and the decks you're trying to attack, and you're not always going to want to have a sweeper.
Interesting. Now, Damon, you play a lot of Blue Moon, and I think you never play a Sweeper main, and like he's referencing maybe a couple Anger of the Gods in your sideboard. I mean, is that your impression as well, that early removal kind of saves you from eating sweepers in most matchups?
I actually disagree with the premise that I don't play sweepers main. There's this card Thing in the Ice that doesn't exactly kill the creatures, but it does something almost as good or sometimes better than killing creatures, and it bounces them all. And this is the outlet that lets you have comfortable matchups against humans, for example, that you can try to bolt, snap, bolt. But a lot of times, Thing in the Ice flipping is what's going to really take you over the top.
Have you played Blue Moon decks without Thing in the Ice and really felt that lack then?
There are certain metas where I think people are playing that. I've seen some of the kind of well-known Blue Moon streamers trim to three Thing in the Ice. Or sometimes they go down to zero and they play more just Bonecrusher Giants and Brazen Borrowers to fill that gap. And that's not too crazy. Bonecrusher Giant is just sort of a two-for-one against creature decks already. But I found Thing in the Ice is a hard card to let go of at the very least. And playing three sometimes feels right, but a lot of times in a lot of metas, playing four is just the way to go, no questions asked.
There's also a card called Shark Typhoon that may replace Thing in the Ice.
Yeah, although they're pretty different in a sense. Thing in the Ice comes down early.
They are definitely different. I think you probably don't want to play the two together, but yeah, you are right. They're pretty different.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out the right number of Shark Typhoons to play in Blue Moon, whether it's zero or two or four. I'm currently feeling more like two.
I played the deck last week. I went 12-3, and I was playing three Shark Typhoons, and I was feeling pretty good about it.
Were you playing Thing in the Ice as well?
I was playing zero Thing in the Ice. Not that was necessarily correct, but I was kind of feeling like there's just a ton of spot removal at the moment. There's like a lot of Stoneblade decks, so I was kind of interested in not playing Thing in the Ice for that particular week.
Interesting. Well, I think that's great feedback from both players.
Yeah, but going back to this question, I have a little bit to say, and that's that if you could build a control deck knowing you're playing as a creature deck, it would just be the biggest joke of a matchup ever. You play just endless spot removal. You would play, you don't really need to care about leveraging up with sweepers, and you just play four bolt, four path, four on thin ice, four winds of abandon, and just kind of keep playing removal spells every single turn and one for one them endlessly. And creature decks can't handle that. If you knew you were going to play against graveyard decks, you'd play four Rest in Peace, four Relic of Progenitus, four Soul Guide Lantern main, and the matches wouldn't even be close. It would come down on turn one, and as long as you can clean up the stray Citrus Supply or beat down, you'd be fine. But in practice, you can't do this because you're playing against a wide variety of decks. You have to be able to play the control role in any number of matchups. And so you need to have your cards for any given matchup be more leveraged than one for ones. And that's where sweepers come in, because sweepers form massive card advantage against a creature deck, where a lot of times they can't actually afford to play around sweepers, because the slower they play, the more time you have to draw them. And so just play into them and hope you don't have it. And that's when you have it, you win the game. There's just so many games in Modern that have decided by turn four Supreme Verdict, your team goes away, this game is now functionally over. And so that's kind of just a really important role to play in a control deck, because creature decks are just such a big chunk of the meta ever since perhaps Faithless Looting was banned, where Terminus was better because it hit Phoenixes and Hogax and Vengevines and Gravecrawlers and Bloodghast, etc. That said, there are definitely metas where it's not correct to play four Supreme Verdict or four Terminus, where two Verdict main and maybe a single one sideboard is all you need to shore up the creature matchups. But I don't think I'd ever want to play a blue-white deck with no Supreme Verdicts or Terminus somewhere in the 75.
All right, so Jiggy Wiggy asks, what is your approach when you want to fit three knuckleheads into a deck, but it seems there's only room for one? So just a little bit of background for Aspiring Spike. Obviously, we brew around a card each week, and often that is the knucklehead. So I reference a very famous story that Pat Riley, the head coach of the Lakers and the Miami Heat and an architect of many basketball championship teams, always said, you can always afford to have one knucklehead on your team when you pick up Dennis Rodman or whatever, but you don't want to have multiple knuckleheads, because then they hang out with each other at the club or, you know, the gentlemen's clubs, etc. So these guys would say, did you try this card? It's like, I try to fit just one speculative card in a deck that has the rest of the cards are good. So then we're kind of not confounding our variables where we're mixing up too many knuckleheads together. So I think that's what Jiggy Wiggy's referencing there.
So the idea is you have three different cards you're trying to test in a deck? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think that's what Jiggy Wiggy's asking. He wants to fit three different sort of speculative cards into a list, and maybe there's only room for one.
Well, if there's only room for one, then I would probably recommend trying it with all three different ones, but just different times and seeing which one feels the best. Usually when I am brewing or building a deck, I more so have one specific knucklehead that I am brewing around. And so I don't think I run into this problem very often. It's not super common that I have a bunch of different cards. It's usually just one. But if it seems like there's only room for one spicy card in the spot, it probably is. And one of your three cards is going to be better than the other two.
Excellent. So this one is specifically for Spike, I think. So Kilgore Trout asks, tips for aspiring streamers. And Brian M. adds, I'd even expand that to aspiring content creators in general. Something I've struggled with recently is feeling like nobody wants to know what I've had for breakfast. Meaning, I'm interested in sharing my thoughts, ideas about Magic, but I'm just a guy. I'm not a grinder. I have no tournament successes, not even league wins to give some results to back my opinions. So obviously, you are a full-time streamer, twitch.tv/aspiringspike. You recently switched to full-time streaming after kind of, you know, building up your following, etc. So what advice do you have for aspiring streamers, aspiring content creators, Magic people in general?
Well, I can speak on this topic for probably an indefinite amount of time, but I'll try to keep it kind of short. So I think that if you're trying to make content, knowing what your goals are for your content is really important, and that's going to give you a direction. Are you just going to try to have some fun and stream a little bit? Do you really want to put your ideas out there? Do you feel like you have good ideas that you want to put out? Do you want to get involved with the community? Do you want to build a following? Figure out, you know, what your goal is. And there's really no wrong answers. It's very different for everybody. I think that what's really important for success on Twitch, whatever that means to you, is to find what you're good at and play into your own specific strengths. Like I'm very good at brewing and I have, you know, high technical skills, and I think I play into that on my own channel. To respond to Brian M, who says he feels like he's just a guy. I mean, we're all just guys, you know. I'm not special in any way. Nobody who is a Magic personality or a personality anywhere is really different than you. I would say that if you want to share your thoughts and ideas about Magic, I would encourage you to do so, but I would encourage you to share your thoughts and ideas when you feel like you have something relevant or new or interesting to say. If you feel like your idea is good, that's when you should share the idea. So like I have a ton of ideas on Magic. I have a ton of decks I brew. I spend hours a day off stream working on lists, but I only share the ones I think are good. And so I guess your comment about nobody wants to know what you've had for breakfast, I think that is probably true, but that doesn't mean there aren't things interesting about you, and that doesn't mean there aren't good ideas and interesting ideas you have, and just being able to, I guess, filter that and try to stand out from all the people posting pictures of their breakfast will, you know, you'll get more feedback, I suppose.
Yeah, I really want to second that idea. Defining success for yourself. So what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? And then you know if you're doing them or not. So not everyone's idea of success is exactly the same, and your version of success doesn't have to mean what someone else's version of success is. So yeah, I think that's great advice from Everett. All right, our last question, and then we are going to let you go. What is your favorite card in Modern that you wish was playable but just isn't powerful enough?
Oh man, there are a lot.
We'll take a couple. We'll take a top three, and we'll get a couple from Damon too.
All right, Dark Confidant is probably number one. It's a card I really like, but I just don't think it's been good in a long time. Celestia Charm is my favorite Magic card, and I would just love to be able to cast it, but it's not really any good.
Most people don't know what that card is. You have to just break it.
Yeah, it's green and white. It's a charm from Return to Ravnica. You can make a 2/2 white Vigilant Knight creature token. You can exile a creature with power 5 or greater, or you can give a creature +2/+2 and trample. And I just love the card to death. It's not very good, but I wish that it was. And also Advent of the Worm is a card I've always like kind of liked in Modern. I've like flashed it back with Torrential Gearhulk before and felt like I was doing something good, but I wasn't. And I do like that card a lot too.
Damon, any cards you wish were playable but just aren't powerful enough?
Oh yeah, the first one is Enigmatic Incarnation, and this is both in Modern and Pioneer. It's probably just not even close to Modern. It was actually kind of close to being playable in Pioneer, but not quite there. The second one is Didn't Say Please. I wish there was a way to make the blue-black kind of mill into the story-type deck with Vantress Gargoyle or Jace's Phantasm or whatever type of build it is really take off, but with my attempts, I never quite got there. I actually played a few more matches with it when I signed up for a league by accident with it when MTGO just auto-selected it, and Didn't Say Please was not up for the challenge even then. How about you, David?
Well, I love Restoration Angel, and that card sees play. I mean, all of a sudden, like, blue-white midrange is I've seen people playing it all of a sudden. It doesn't seem very good to me, but they're giving me false hope, so I'm willing to cling to it. And I also love Ninja of the Deep Hours. That card, I love everything about it. During the, like, first week of Oko, we brewed up multiple 5-0 lists that were, like, Sultai ninja decks, and that was a beautiful time. It turns out the super powerful card in that list was Oko, and the ninja shell was really just hitching its wagon to a bright shining star that flew too close to the sun. So anytime I see Restoration Angel, I always get excited. I really loved actually Aspiring Spike in the heyday or the dark days, depending on where you come from, of Companion getting to play Restoration Angel Kiki combo, but it was built into this value shell. So often you were just playing Restoration Angel at their end of turn to blink a Coiling Oracle or whatever. Or blink Urien, which is just, that was about as much value as anyone should allow to be have legally.
Yeah, the Soul Herder decks were, I played a few variants of that in Rogue Refinery with Vivian, and they were a ton of fun. Actually, I'm curious, Spike, what are your thoughts on Soul Herder decks right now?
So I still actually liked the 80-card Yorion Soul Herder deck, even post-Companion nerf with Astrolabe. I actually played it at some premiere event recently and did okay with it. I think that Abundant Growth can replace Astrolabe in that deck. It's not doing the same thing it was doing in the three color Uro piles, where it was filtering Field of Ruin mana into blue mana, and it was letting you get all these islands for Mystic Sanctuary. But it is much worse than Astrolabe. I don't know that you necessarily need that card to be good, but having that one mana permanent that fixes your mana in your four color deck and makes Yorion get card advantage when your opponent sweeps your board is pretty important. I would expect that Soul Herder decks are playable and probably like a good metagame call if you feel like the Prowess decks are on the decline.
Do you still feel like Urien is the way to build it? The 80 cards kind of let you slip in that combo package that you could kind of sneak in, and there was enough replicable effects that you didn't feel like you were losing anything in consistency?
Yeah, I do. I think Urien synergizes really well with the deck. The card is incredibly powerful, and I think that if you build it with the Court of Calling package, one, your Court of Callings are better because you can fit more targets in. You're not going to draw your Kiki Jiki as often, which is actually pretty valuable in a Kiki Cord combo shell. And the biggest weakness of Yorion is that your sideboard cards are really, really taxed. But if you build your deck with all of these creature tutors, you can fill your sideboard with highly effective tutor targets in any given matchup, and then you can really maximize those sideboard slots in a way that most Yorion decks can't.
What do you think about Restoration Angel in these blue-white midrange lists? Isn't it just a bad...
I don't get it.
It's just a bad Sharknado. I mean, you're hoping to cast Restoration Angel and blink a Wall of Omens. It's like, there's one card that just lets you do that for four mana. You get a 2/2 flyer, and you draw a card.
I feel like these blue-white midrange decks are heroes, and they're really doing good work, but I don't understand how they're winning, and I don't expect them to be too good going forward. But the huge shout out, if you're liking the deck and having success with it, don't stop is my message to you.
Yeah, the blue white midrange deck featuring a bunch of spell quellers and Restoration Angels, etc., has kind of been this like tier 2.5 deck in Modern for forever at this point. People put up 5-0s consistently with it because people love it, and so it's just people that play it consistently. Some of them are actually, I think, quite good pilots with it.
Kurivor, especially.
Right. And the deck is actually, playing a bunch of fundamentally powerful Magic cards. And so the 5-0s aren't like, holy cow, like this doesn't seem possible to me. Like, for example, Slither was 5-0, perhaps. But yeah, I agree that it's just not actually that good of a deck, and I don't see why it would have gotten any better.
It just seems like Stoneforge Mystic is better than like all the rest of the blue-white midrange cards that these decks are playing.
Yeah, I like Sharkblade as a blue-white midrange deck much more.
It seems like it's doing exactly the same thing. Instead of playing Wall of Omens, you get to play Stoneforge Mystic, and instead of playing Restoration Angel, you get to play Sharknado. And like I said, mostly what you're wanting to do with your Restoration Angel is pay four mana, get a flyer to attack their Teferi or Planeswalker, and maybe draw a card if you have a Wall of Omens in play. The Shark does it, and does it through Teferi, it seems like they've just printed better cards. And I love Restoration Angel as much as the next man or woman, but yeah, maybe its time has passed. But yeah, like Spike said, shout out to people who are doing what they love. If I wasn't having to brew up around a new card every week, I'd probably be jamming the queues with Restoration Angel and losing to the better blue-white mid-range decks.
There's no shame in just playing decks you like, and I feel like now is probably the best time in Magic history to just sit at home and play the decks you like and enjoy the game.
Yeah, Magic is a game, so you're supposed to have fun doing it, and so you need to define what's fun for you. If it's winning, that's one thing, but if it's playing Restoration Angel, if it's playing Dark Confidant, if it's...
Yeah.
Whatever. Please continue to do that. I hope everyone is encouraged by these bans. Obviously, we would prefer designs that didn't require bannings. There have been a lot more bannings recently for various reasons. But yeah, I'm excited about Pioneer. It's exciting to have Aspiring Spike back brewing in Pioneer. And yeah, any closing thoughts?
No, just thanks for having me on. I enjoyed my time here. You guys are cool.
Yeah, it's been great having you. And Pioneer should be fresh as new snow after Christmas Day.
Yeah, it's a blast so far. I'd recommend getting in the queues while it's still just Christmas land and everybody's doing whatever they want.
Yeah, before the weekend, and once we start having a bunch of lists that are filling the top eights, then maybe some coalescing will begin. So yeah, big shout out to Aspiring Spike. Thank you very much for joining us. Next week, we will be rejoined by the CEO. He will have hopefully started the move into his new digs. Maybe he'll sound even better. We don't know. So we will leave everyone with a goodbye. And yeah, jump in those queues. There's never been a better time. Take care.
See you guys in the queues. And you can catch Aspiring Spike in the queues.
From 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, Monday through Friday. And then I usually just stream a challenge or PTQ on the weekend, whichever one I feel like playing in.
Twitch.tv/AspiringSpike.
Twitch.tv/AspiringSpike.
If you don't know, now you know. All right. Thank you, sir. Everyone take care.
That brings us to the end of episode 66 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed our discussion with Everett as much as we did. Deck lists from today's show can be found in the episode description in your podcast player or at our homepage, faithlessbrewing.podbean.com. We are a listener-supported podcast. If you'd like to support our content, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/faithlessbrewing. This comes with some cool benefits like Discord access, extended show notes, and community leagues that go places organized play won't. You can also find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG. We'd appreciate it if you leave us a friendly review wherever you listen to podcasts. As always, stay safe, happy brewing, and we'll see you next week.